With that, we'll proceed to the second case for oral argument. That would be the appellant would be William Klager, Jr., and the appellee is the State of South Dakota. For the appellant is Mr. H.I. King, an attorney from Aberdeen, and for the appellee state is Mr. Richard Neal, a special assistant attorney general from Pierre. Mr. King, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. By way of introduction, my name is H.I. King, an attorney from Aberdeen, and I represent Bill Klager. I, in preparing this argument, looked at the facts of this case and believe they're important. Mr. Klager, on March 4th, 2009, was at work as a taxidermist, working at a shop called the Taxidermy Man. He's a long-term resident of the community of Aberdeen. He's from Stratford, a town near there. He's been a taxidermist there for about 8 years or more. He's never had a game fish and parks officer inspect him or come to his premises, which is located at his home. Defendant is a licensed taxidermist. On March 4th, 2009, a game fish and parks officer for the state of South Dakota came to his premises, his home, in his shop, and was going to conduct a routine, quote-unquote, inspection. Klager refused and asked the officer to leave the premises. The officer did not leave. Eventually, the mutual fears of the parties came to a head, and Mr. Klager called additional law enforcement, and additional law enforcement appeared by the sheriff, and he was issued a ticket for violation of 41.633 of the South Dakota Codified Laws. I believe the facts are important because the statute and the enforcement and the warrantless inspection provided by the statute failed in this case.
Now, Mr. King, and I'll ask Mr. Neal, he can come in when he gets his turn. Apparently, there's no dispute on what happened here, is there?
No.
So it's just a legal question what we have to answer.
Right, and the reason that I think it's important to bring up the facts, not because there is a factual issue, but to show that there is confusion on the part of both parties. And the confusion was drawn by the facts that the warrantless inspection authorized by the South Dakota statute didn't do its job. It didn't do its job by not adequately informing that an inspection was going to be certain and not adequately informing them that it was going to occur at all. The Supreme Court of the United States has dealt with this issue before in warrantless inspections and eventually through a number of cases ending with, I believe, New York versus Berger, came to the conclusion that you can have a warrantless search if there are three things met. Now, that means that the Fourth Amendment requirements are less in a business premises than they would be in a home, and it's less when it's in a pervasively regulated industry. But the Fourth Amendment still applies, and there's still protections that are afforded, but in a different way. And in a warrantless inspection, they need to have a substantial government interest. There has to be a statutory scheme. And there has to be limits on the discretion of the inspecting officer. The statute in the third case failed miserably. And it didn't place the limits on the discretion of the inspecting officer. He's limited as to time and place, but he's not limited to whether there's an inspection at all. Mr. Klager was an inspector for 8 years. The officer appears and says, I'm going to conduct a routine inspection. What came to happen is what can be expected when the statute fails to afford the protections of the Fourth Amendment in a reasonable substitute, which is to two parts of the statute, which is to let the person know that they're being searched accordingly, according to law, and two, that the discretion is not the police officer's or not the law enforcement officer. In this case, the discretion was completely the law enforcement officer. Once in 8 years, he stops by and conducting a routine inspection. Even though Mr. Klager received notice every year from his license renewal that he's subject to inspection, if it doesn't happen for 8 years, that loses its bite or loses its believability in its application.
How much credence do you give to the fact that every year when you fill out his license application, he was agreeing to the search? Is that the end of the discussion, or does it go on from there?
Well, that's correct, he was, but it loses its meaning when there is no inspection. When you're filling out a thing agreeing, an application agreeing that you're going to be subject to inspection, that's part of it. But the certainty of inspection never occurs. So really what he's signing is meaningless eventually when 8 years pass and there's no inspection occurring at all.
Well, he was agreeing every year, every license year, he signed the license application.
That's
where he agreed to inspection in his records.
Yes, he did.
Isn't that the core value that we're looking at under the Fourth Amendment, expectation of privacy?
Well, with the
how could he have any expectation of privacy if he expressly consented to inspection of the records every year?
The argument is that it occurs, there is an expectation of privacy of the Fourth Amendment. It's attenuated through a pervasively regulated industry. It is made less by the statutory scheme, and a substantial government interest. So those are two prongs out of three. The third prong, and it doesn't say two out of three is good. The third prong is a certainty of inspection and limiting the discretion. And this statute does not do that. It leaves to where some people are inspected, some people are inspected sometimes, some people aren't inspected at all. When it's left to who makes the determination, it's the law enforcement officer, which the statute is supposed to limit his discretion specifically.
Well, the record here reflects that there's 200 licensed taxidermists in South Dakota, and the department apparently inspects about 100 of them a year.
That's what they testified to. That's what occurred. But in this case,
what number is necessary before it becomes a
regular issue? And that's where we get into the argument with Mr. Neal in the state of South Dakota. I don't think a number of inspections is required. Certainty of inspection is required. A knowledge that you will be inspected is required. One of the stalwarts of a protection of the Fourth Amendment is if you know you're going to be inspected, that will afford you the statute affords you the opportunity. Well, here we have every year on the renewal, he's informed that he's subject to inspection or will need to produce the records. But on the other half, he's not being required to do anything. He's never met a game, fish, and parks officer in reference to his industry, which is taxidermy, except on this one occasion, on March 4th, 2009. And what happened, the confusion and the facts are almost to be expected by the lack. And what allowed the department to choose once in 8 years was the statute, where the certainty of inspection was really shown in how it was exercised, or lack of certainty of inspection was really shown by what happened in this case and which was factually occurred.
So, for instance, if the regulations or the law or maybe even this agreement that he signs or his application said once a year you will be inspected, or twice a year, or every year in whatever month?
No, and I don't think...
What do you need?
Well, I don't think this court can afford more requirements than I think South Dakota or the United States Constitution afford more rights. But I don't think any of the cases require a certain number of inspections. And in fact, New York versus Berger had no number specified. But it's the certainty of the inspection. You will be inspected. If you look at this statute, there are two things. Certainty of inspection limits the discretion of the officer. That's the third prong of a three-part analysis of whether the statute meets constitutional muster. The fact of the matter, they met two prongs and failed miserably on the third. And the facts indicate that, one, the statute did not limit the discretion of the officer because he exercised his discretion and decided on one sunny spring day to visit the premises of the taxidermy man once in 8 years.
We have a question from Justice Segrist.
Yes, it does, Justice. I'm not saying that it's an unlimited discretion. There is some limits that are imposed, but the discretion in that part provides that when asked, you have to be in business hours or between 8 and 5 or whatever business hours are. There's a number of things that there adds to what is discretion, but not unlimited discretion. And in this case, yes, there's some limitations, but that's only part of the limitation. And if they limit portions of it, the major portion of whether it's going to be done at all is not limited. They may tell him what they're going to inspect, what part of the record, and how they're going to do it, and what time. But they leave open completely whether it will occur or not. And in this case, it occurred once in 8 years. And sometimes it doesn't occur at all.
So is it the randomness of this that is the problem? That it's so infrequent, unpredictable, and random that it causes a problem?
Yes. In this respect, that it's not certain. That a taxidermist cannot adhere to this statute and look at it and have it enforced the way it's been for the last years that it's been in effect and say, I'm going to be inspected. I know I am. Because the fact of the matter is that he wasn't inspected. The fact of the matter is that who determined he was going to be inspected was the enforcement officer, which is exactly the Fourth Amendment, what the Fourth Amendment, or the protections of the Fourth Amendment try to protect people against. If there's going to be an exception to the warrant requirement, there has to be a certainty of inspection. The person has to know that the property they're going to have or the records they're going to produce are going to be inspected.
Now, do they ever have to turn in? I didn't see this in the law or the regulations, but do they turn in their records at any time? I mean, are they required at any time of the year before they maybe reapply for a license or anything that they have to provide their records from the prior year on how many animals and what kind of animals, they have to keep?
It's my understanding what is stated in these statutes are the requirements. It goes to really whether it's a pervasively regulated industry. And we don't concede that, but there is that they should, when requested under the statute, provide the information in those statutes. But in talking about a pervasively regulated industry, there is no requirement as to what you need to be a taxidermyman. There isn't a requirement of the health code to come out and tell you on how to treat those carcasses. There isn't any regulation of taxidermy other than keep certain records pursuant to these statutes and provide them when asked. And that's it. To be a taxidermist, I think you send in a certain amount of money, and they issue a license and inform you of protections or searches that may or may not occur.
So you don't have to pass a course or a test or anything like that?
No, and there isn't, like the health food or the food industry or anything else, there isn't any inspection of the premises. There isn't any requirement of how it's done. There's no certification. It's really, except for the statutes that are mentioned here, it's not very regulated, pervasively regulated industry.
So if I send in a check for $15 today, I'll get my license?
I think so.
Do you have to be educated and trained in order to be a pervasively regulated industry? You know, on two occasions, the Supreme Court has considered cases where that's not required, for instance, under the Gun Control Act and under liquor laws. In those license situations, you're just selling drugs or booze. You don't have to be trained.
That's probably correct in the instance that you're referring to. But when it goes to pervasively regulated, how much regulation is there? And in this case...
But the Supreme Court said they were not pervasive, or they were considered pervasively regulated because they had to be licensed to sell liquor or to sell guns. They didn't have to be educated or trained.
That may... I think that's true, but you have to meet... I think even in... And I'm speaking off the top of my head, but even... If you're going to sell liquor, there might be some requirements as to how you can obtain a license and that matter. But the court may be right in that. And my central argument is not whether it's pervasively regulated. I just have some question that it is not as pervasively regulated as one may think.
So are you conceding that this is a pervasively regulated?
No, I'm conceding what the justices said, that... that they have regulated mechanical parts, which doesn't require certification. But those are industries that sell a product or dismantle machinery. Here, we're stuffing an animal and dealing with the game and dealing with carcasses. And I'm just pointing out that that something that may, should, or should be regulated hasn't been regulated. Although we may agree that it's a pervasively regulated industry reluctantly, and we may agree that it's a substantial interest that warrants unexpected inspections and unannounced inspections, it does not afford the protection which is the certainty in limiting the discretion of the public officer or the inspecting officer. The Fourth Amendment protection requires three things. This statute provides two of them, does not provide the last two, which are divided into whether there's certainty of inspection and whether the discretion of the officer is limited. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. King. Mr. Neal, you have 20 minutes, sir. Just dying to ask, if I send in $15, am I a taxidermist? Do you need anything else?
Your Honor, I actually am prepared to answer that question. It may not be the answer you want to hear, but I'm prepared to answer that question.
What, you have to be a good moral character or something?
May it please the Court. I appreciate the opportunity to represent the state of South Dakota in this matter. My name is Dick Neal. I'm a special attorney, assistant attorney general, representing the Department of Game and Fish and Parks. I do represent the state of South Dakota in this matter. Your Honor, I'm going to anticipate one of what you indicated earlier was one of your first questions, and that is, does the state have a problem with basically the facts being uncontested? And we do not. The facts essentially are uncontested. What happened here is pretty straightforward. An inspection was requested, and it was refused. And that inspection is statutorily authorized.
And I take it from the transcript that he was the officer was in uniform, badge. I mean, there was no question who this gentleman was.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor.
All right.
No question.
And he was very clear as to what he wanted.
Yes, right. That's correct. Your Honor, what I want to do this morning is focus on what I think are the two things that the appellant just focused on in his argument. The first being this whole issue of regularity and certainty of inspection. The appellant's argument in this case is premised on dicta from Marshall v. Barlow's Inc. and the dissent, and part, in particular, part two of the dissent in New York versus Berger. And that dicta was rejected by the Berger court. The Berger majority found the dicta in Marshall v. Barlow persuasive. Part two of Justice Brennan's dissent, I submit to this court, would have been the majority decision, because it's almost word for word, Your Honor, what is in the appellant's brief. It's almost word for word the argument that Justice Brennan used in his dissent. And the Berger majority said, no, we're not going to require that kind of, that level of certainty. What the Berger court said was, look, it's a factor to consider. But what we want to do as a court is look at, does the statute as a whole place adequate limits on the discretion of the inspecting officer? There's no question in the eyes of the state, Your Honor, that 41.633 meets that burden. Another thing I find interesting, Your Honor, the appellant's brief cites no cases that have been decided since 1987, since Berger was decided, in support of his position. And I will tell the court, I found none. I would think when you have the burden, you want to find some authority that supports your position. And the appellant in this case cited no post-Berger cases. And I would remind the court that this court, in 2002, decided Rechtenbach. And in Rechtenbach, this court applied the Berger criteria. And, Your Honors, if you read Rechtenbach, and I'm going to guess you have, what you're going to find is that Rechtenbach was not much different from this case in the sense of the randomness of the inspection. The officer, the highway patrolman in Rechtenbach, stopped the trucker. He was just on routine patrol. And he stopped the trucker because patrolmen had authority to enforce the motor carrier laws and the authority to inspect logbooks. And that's why that officer in that case stopped. The only reason this court, and I believe correctly, found that decision to be, or that action to be constitutional.
With Rechtenbach, we had trucking, which is a heavily regulated industry. Way stations all across the state of South Dakota. There's all kinds of rules and regulations about trucking and all. And but my question is, do we have the same kind of pervasive regulation with taxidermy?
Yes, we do, Your Honor. And in answering your question so affirmatively, I am relying on Berger. And what Berger says, the Berger test for determining closely regulated businesses, there's six criteria. First of all, the general statement in Berger is that the regulation is sufficiently pervasive and defined that the owner of such a facility cannot help but be aware that he will be subject to effective regulation, or inspection, excuse me. In Berger, the court found the regulation to be pervasive and extensive based on six factors. Number one, it required the acquisition of a license or permit to do business. In South Dakota, a taxidermist has to have a license to do business. It required the payment, second criteria, requires payment of a registration fee. In South Dakota, you pay a $15 registration fee. Number three, it required maintenance of records that were to be open for police inspection. SDCL 41633 does exactly that. It requires taxidermists to maintain records and make them available, plus specimens, make them available for inspection by an authorized representative of the department. Number four, civil penalties. Our regulatory scheme provides for civil penalties, revocation of the license, if you fail to comply with the law. provides for criminal penalties. Well, that's why we're here today, Your Honors, because this defendant was found guilty of a Class 2 misdemeanor for failing to allow the inspection of his records. Finally, the regulation has been in effect for many years. Now, Your Honors, I took a look at the legislative history that follows the statute, and I went back to 1941, and I can tell you for a fact that this inspection requirement has for sure been the law in this state since 1941. So I think it is our position, the state's position, that the practice of taxidermy complies with every single criteria that Berger says creates or is the foundation for a closely regulated business.
But the earlier provisions of the statute to go back into the 20s and the 30s, in those days you had to prove you had good moral character, and the legislature dropped that. Isn't that an example of less regulation of a pervasive nature than more?
Your Honor, I'm not sure. Would you repeat the question, please?
Okay. If you go back to the original statute, it comes in 1925. The earlier statute required that the applicant be of good moral character. He had to satisfy the game warden that he was of good moral character. That gets dropped later in the statutory history. So if you're saying it's pervasive, why would they have dropped the requirement for good moral character?
Your Honor, I honestly don't have an answer to your question.
All right.
I really don't.
All right.
Your Honors, the appellate argues about frequency of inspections, that we have to have frequency of inspections. First of all, 41633 does not mandate frequency of inspections. It's a statute that gives the department the right to conduct these inspections, but basically when they're necessary. And there is a regularity to the manner in which the department does apply this statute. And it's been discussed by this court earlier. Our department, and the record shows this, conducts roughly 100 inspections a year of taxidermists, of the, at least at the time of the motion hearing, 201. So every year, roughly, the department conducts inspections of approximately half of our licensed taxidermists.
And that's a fact that's not in dispute either, I understand.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor. I don't believe it is. So, Your Honor, that is the only frequency that is really required by the statute. And let's talk about the third prong, because the focus of the appellant's argument in front of this court is the third prong of the Berger test. And the third prong of the Berger test basically requires that the regulation or the statute that authorized the warrantless inspections must perform two of the functions of a warrant. The first function is the owner of the premises must be advised that the search is pursuant to the law and has a properly defined scope. Let's take that one first. There's no question that this search was authorized by the law. SDCL 41633 clearly says that there's a record-keeping requirement, that it has to be done at the place of business, and it affords an authorized department representative the right during normal business hours to conduct an inspection of those records and specimens. So, by the way, as was also pointed out in the appellant's argument earlier, Your Honors, when a taxidermist gets a license, and by the way, this is an annual thing, and the court also noted that, every single year, when a taxidermist applies for a license, they have to sign that application, which contains that, basically that certification, if you will, that says, hey, I'm required to maintain records and specimens, and I also understand that I am to make them available to authorized representatives of the department for inspection. They signed that. This defendant signed that. In addition, when the department issues a license, and this is an exhibit 2 in the record, Your Honor, it's, Your Honors, it is the laws and regulations for taxidermists. That also tells them what the law is and what the regulations are.
Are there any reporting requirements with licensing that you have to notify the department of certain things?
Your Honor, the only thing that I'm aware of that the regulations require of a taxidermist is that they maintain their records for a period of 5 years.
Okay.
But the answer to your question is, I think your question is, are they required to submit them to the department?
Yeah.
The answer is no, sir.
Okay.
No, sir, they are not.
So it's not like a sales tax license or anything?
Exactly correct.
Okay.
That's right. Now, and here's where the rub is. I mean, the next part of my argument is where the rub is in this case. That the statute that authorizes the warrant which inspection must perform, the second function of the warrant, which the discretion of the inspecting officers must be limited. Now, pardon me, Your Honor.
Sure.
The function of a statute, like 41633, is to act in the place of a magistrate. It is the statute. It is the statute that determines the reasonableness of the search. And in this case, the discretion of an officer has to be limited under Berger. Under Berger, the discretion has to be limited as to time, place, and scope. So let's talk about those three requirements for a moment. Time, during normal business hours. Place. Well, the statute says that they have to maintain their records and their specimens at their place of business. So it only follows and makes common sense that they also have to maintain their records at their place of business. It has to be an authorized representative of the department that conducts the inspection. There's no issue with that here. And scope of inspection. The scope of the inspection is that the officer, and by the way, asks to be provided. You notice that. The statute requires the taxidermist to provide those records to the officer for inspection. The officer just doesn't go running into a taxidermist's place of business and starts rummaging around looking for his records and specimens. And what they do is, that part of it is, they examine, and the statute says that they can examine their records and their specimens. It meets every criteria. Your Honors, this statute meets every criteria that Berger places. And, by the way, I keep saying Berger. And you know something? It meets every criteria that this court has placed on these kinds of inspections by virtue of State versus Rechtenbach. Meets every one of them. Now, let's talk about one other thing that the appellant brought up in his argument, and I'd like to address. Well, I think I already have. He doesn't think that the statute in this case, we talked about closely regulated business. I think that was his other argument. I'm sorry, Your Honors. I think his argument was that it wasn't closely regulated, and I think I just established to the court why it is. Your Honors, the appellant in this case has an incredibly heavy burden. As this court is aware, I'm not telling this court anything it doesn't already know. A statute is presumed to be constitutional. And to rebut that presumption of constitutionality, you have to do so by beyond a reasonable doubt.
I don't think he's challenging the statute, is he? The constitutionality? Isn't it the search that's being challenged?
Your Honor, I've been operating from day one under the assumption he's challenging the constitutionality of the statute.
Couldn't you just challenge the search?
Well, what he's saying is that the search does not... That the statute does not provide constitutionally adequate protections. And I would submit to the court that it does provide those protections. Your Honors, he has the burden. I respectfully submit to this court the appellant has not met that record. And in fact, that the lower courts, both the magistrate court and the circuit court, were correct in finding that there was no constitutional violation in the application of this statute to the defendant in this case. I therefore would respectfully request that you affirm the decision of the lower courts. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I will rest.
Nobody has ever chastised for quitting early.
Thank you, Your
Thank
Honor.
You. Okay. Mr. King, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Can we apply this statute constitutionally?
Pardon me?
Can this statute be applied constitutionally?
I don't understand the question.
Well, does it have to be thrown out completely, or can it be applied appropriately?
It could be applied appropriately if there was certainty in the inspections, but it doesn't.
But you actually are challenging, you want us to say that the statute itself is unconstitutional.
The statute
is not applied unconstitutionally. What are you arguing?
Both things. One, I think the statute allows it to be applied unconstitutionally. The statute doesn't require any inspections, or doesn't require any inspections occur. This is where.
But if the regulatory agency here would pass regulations that limited when and how these the timing of them, the random, the taking away the discretionary part and making them more regular and so forth, would that then meet the constitutional challenge that you're challenging?
I mean,
obviously they could set up some kind of regulatory procedure.
If they set up a regulatory procedure that closes the discretionary possibilities under the statute. The statute is what I'm arguing is, yes, they have time and place and what's going to be searched. They have all of these things. But the big thing, which is whether it's going to occur at all or ever to someone in a particular time, is not addressed by the statute.
But it could be. Couldn't it be addressed by the regulations?
If regulations have full force and effect of of what the statute does of law, it would place the limiting.
So has the department passed any regulations that would address those problems, giving more direction and taking less, so that the officer doesn't have as much discretion?
I'm aware of none, and I've seen some, but and I know a little bit about the history, but I have not read any of those in particular. What needs to be addressed here is that.
So your concern is the fact that they don't do it every year or every 2 years, or they just don't know when you're going to do it.
My concern is that they don't have to do it at all.
And they don't have to do it.
And I don't think that applies to the certainty of inspection. It's not the numbers requirement. It's not two times a year they should do half. They can choose whether to do so or not. And that isn't what will protect you and afford you the Fourth Amendment protections. It starts out, as my understanding is that the search of a business premises is attenuated. It's attenuated if it's even more if it's a closely regulated industry. But the Fourth Amendment protections still apply. And they can be bypassed with a warrantless inspection if it does three things, and only if it does three things. And in this case, it does two, but it doesn't do the third. And to argue that it does all three is obviously not true. There's no certainty in inspection. And the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. There isn't anything more.
Anything more? I guess not. And once again, you're not chastised for quitting early either. Thank you, Mr. King.